Hello, I'm Yvonne Louie, AJNR podcast editor, your guide to the audio digest of the AJNR. I'm very pleased to present a special collection podcast today highlighting the AJNR April 2013 special collection on neuroimaging of dementias. Of course, a notable topic, particularly germane as the U.S. geriatric population continues to increase. In addition, Alzheimer's dementia is not the only topic of interest, and there are several other papers which are featured discussing frontal temporal lobe dementia, as well as Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and movement disorders, just to name a few. Here to join me is Lucian Levy, MD, PhD, guest editor of this AJNR special collection. Dr. Levy is one of the senior editors of the AJNR, an expert in neurodegenerative disorders and functional imaging, professor of radiology and the director of neuroradiology at George Washington University Medical Center in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Lucian, thanks for joining us today.
Yvonne, thanks for inviting me.
What was your first thought when you embarked on compiling this special collection?
My first thought was that dementia is very important, especially now. And there's a lot of research that's been going on. And 90% of the research has been actually done over the past 15 years. And I felt that all of this should be summarized and collected into a special review.
Sure. It's very encouraging, actually, that we have made so much progress and inroads in research in dementia over the past 10 to 15 years. There's a lot to do still, but we didn't know very much at all 15 years ago, as you said. In your introduction to the special collection, you discuss quite a bit about your organization of this collection. Can you briefly review for our online listeners how you went about organizing all these different papers?
The first thing I did is I did a review of all the articles that were published in the AJNR on dementias, and I looked at more than 250 articles.
Wow.
Then I took the ones that I thought were the most relevant with several selection criteria, and these included, number one, the articles that were important in describing the way dementias are diagnosed. And number two, the ones that had useful imaging techniques. Mm-hmm. And number three, I did a citation search, so I chose the ones that had the higher number of citations. Number four were the ones that were timely, in other words, the ones that were more recent rather than the older ones. And number five, the ones that influenced patient management.
Right. And then how did you organize them in terms of they're grouped under some subheadings in the special collection?
Right, they were grouped in order to make them more easily accessible to the reader. And so instead of grouping them according to, let's say, just pure imaging techniques, they grouped first by clinical conditions, and then with additional following sections dealing with the different kinds of imaging approaches. And so the big categories include general reviews of the subject matter, the influence of genetics, the types of dementias, and imaging techniques.
Great. What was your ultimate goal in preparing this collection in terms of what the reader would get out of it?
I wanted to provide a useful source of information in one book on the imaging and evaluation of dementias to make this very easily accessible to either the younger researcher or radiologist who wants to learn a little bit, but also to the more advanced researcher so that they would have all these articles in one book.
Yeah, all in one place. No, it's going to be a great resource, certainly for our faculty here at NYU who are working on aging and dementia. So looking at the review articles you chose, I was intrigued by an article by Dorment and Seidenworm on the intersection between movement disorders like Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's, because clearly not only do the clinical but the pathologic findings in some of these entities overlap and, of course, is an area of active research. What's the word on that? Is dementia related to Parkinson's part of an Alzheimer's spectrum, or is it completely a separate disorder? Or are they overlapping? What's happening there?
Well, these are very good questions. And the interesting part is that Parkinson's disease begins with a movement disorder.
Right.
So how come they develop a dementia sort of similar to a perhaps Alzheimer's dementia? What is the pathway that begins differently and ultimately leads to a dementia? Well, if we begin by the pathological changes that occur in Parkinson's disease and Parkinson's dementia, they are the deposits known as Lewy bodies, which are made of alpha-synuclein, that's a protein. Lewy bodies are also found in other brain disorders, including, as you know, dementias with Lewy bodies. So what's the relationship between all this? Well, many people with both dementia with Lewy bodies and Parkinson's disease also have plaques and tangles, mm-hmm. which are the hallmark brain changes linked to Alzheimer's disease. So ultimately, even though the Parkinson's begin with a movement disorder, as the brain changes gradually spread, they begin to affect mental function and memory.
Right. It's interesting. I guess there are also overlapping mechanisms by which the brain responds to these either genetic or environmental injury, if you will, over time that we're seeing, like you said, amyloid, tau, neurofibrillary tangles, Lewy bodies in a cross-section of disorders.
That article actually, they also talk about other movement disorders, not just dementias. And these
right.
other movement disorders also progress the dementias.
Right. One area that I'm looking at is traumatic brain injury, and of course, chronic traumatic encephalopathy has been, I guess, grouped with these chronic and progressive neurodegenerative disorders. And people are very curious about what the overlap between these other dementing disorders and movement disorders are with chronic traumatic encephalopathy as well. In another review article that's in the collection by Bruce Miller, he summarizes atrophy patterns in different dementing disorders. For our listeners, what's your clinical take-home message? Should we be commenting on specific atrophy patterns in routine clinical practice?
Well, his point is that the atrophy patterns can help to differentiate patients with different types of dementia. He lists Alzheimer's, frontotemporal dementias, Lewy body, progressive supranuclear palsy. But there is a certain amount of overlap between the imaging and the clinical evaluations. And so eventually the specificity and sensitivity of neuroimaging will need to be improved. And over the next many years, it will be important for these techniques to progress and to capture the differences between the dementias. And the thing is, we as neuroradiologists, we will need to learn these patterns in order to support our clinical colleagues.
Sure. I think one area that's quite promising, I mean, there's more and more quantification happening, which can be good and bad. If you don't know what to do with all the quantified information, it can be a problem too. But there are these programs now that can segment different specific regions and compare to a normal aging cohort where you might fall in that distribution. Perhaps, do you think tools like that will be the future?
I think that these tools are certainly useful, but I think that the future of certainly of therapy will include the early detection. So the earlier you can detect, the better. And then intervention with many different ways. I think we're going to talk a little more about that. And the thing is, by the time you see the volume changes, it's sometimes too late.
Right.
In other words, you've come to the crime scene. You know that somebody did something, but you don't know exactly how he did it or who did it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is what we want to get to. We want to detect the disease as early as possible, or maybe just try to come up with ways to prevent it.
Sure. So turning our attention then to some of the original research articles that you chose for the collection, you have collected here an impressive summary of recent work in the field of imaging and dementia. As we mentioned earlier, this is an important topic with America's aging population. What is next for Alzheimer's dementia with regard to imaging research? What are the key unanswered questions? I guess you touched on finding out what the origins, the mechanisms are.
Well, the goals of dementia research include increased understanding of Alzheimer's dementia and finding ways to prevent, treat, and cure this disease as well as other movement disorders. Now, I'll direct you also to the brain mapping project that President Obama recently announced.
Sure. You had a nice editorial about that that I read recently.
Yeah, I'm glad someone read it. it's a part of a research perspective. And basically, we're trying to say that brain mapping can help clinicians by providing a tool to evaluate these diseases. But brain mapping by itself only is not enough. We will need to define normal, abnormal functions, include the therapeutic aspects, but we need to do this in a very organized and inclusive way with systematic teams to include various different disciplines.
Right.
And also develop databases to share information, and some of this has already been done. Eventually, we will develop also better biomarkers that tell us a little bit about brain function.
Yeah, it does seem like a huge challenge, but, you know, encouraging that the federal government is interested in solving, in tackling some of these totally unknown or incompletely understood central nervous system disorders. There's another provocative editorial that you wrote in 2007 about practice and learning inducing brain growth. So this gives me hope, Lucian. I feel like I should start, you know, taking violin lessons now. Why did you include this editorial, and what are the ramifications of brain plasticity in dementia?
Well, this is a very exciting and relatively recent discovery that the brain can actually grow, even during a period of weeks, in response to the acquisition of new skills. And learning and practicing different tasks can also help the brain grow. And by keeping one's brain active with brain exercises or other types of engagement, you can perhaps build up a reserve of cells and connections, and even some people say grow new brain cells. If you protect your brain in a way by strengthening brain cells and connections, that can help. Of course, it may not treat Alzheimer's, but this may help to delay the onset of symptoms and therefore prolong a higher quality of life.
Right, and there certainly is evidence that if there is some mental reserve, that symptoms may actually manifest later in Alzheimer's. So I guess the sort of old adage of trying to keep your mind active, and maybe I should encourage my mom to do crossword puzzles.
Yeah, definitely. keeping your mind active, doing brain exercises. But also, we've talked a lot about imaging and treatments. Diet and exercise is also very important.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Physical exercise.
Sure, sure. Physical exercise. Well, I'm glad you mentioned diet, because I was also interested in an article by Clifford Jack's group that showed glucose metabolic changes in patients with mild cognitive impairment. And I'm curious to hear what you think the intersection between diabetes, which of course is another big public health issue in the U.S., and dementia are. Obviously, the populations also are now overlapping. But what's the relationship between diabetes and dementia?
Okay, that's a very good question. Diabetes and Alzheimer's disease, they are related in ways that aren't completely clear. We know that patients with diabetes, especially type 2, are at a higher risk of eventually developing Alzheimer's disease or other dementias such as vascular dementias.
Sure.
And these patients, they can sometimes have brain changes that are very similar to those seen with Alzheimer's disease. Possibly, if each condition, such as vascular dementia and Alzheimer's disease, potentiate the other one. So therefore, taking steps to prevent or control diabetes may help to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease.
Right. Well, that's encouraging, because that's certainly something that we can do something about. Do you have a favorite paper out of this whole lot, or a couple that stand out in your mind for whatever reason?
I have many favorite papers, but I think the one that I personally like was that editorial about brain growth. Mm-hmm. The fact that the brain can actually grow in response to stimulation.
Sure. There are a lot of papers that have been reported about brain shrinkage over time, atrophy, loss of neurons, so that is very exciting. Let me ask you, what was the most fun thing, the most satisfying thing about putting together this special collection?
Well, I think it was just having everything in one place,
sure.
Organized in one place. And actually, this also led me to write this editorial on the research perspective for the brain mapping project.
Sure.
So one thing led to another.
And I have to ask you before I let you go, because I know you're an expert in CNS applications of MR spectroscopy, I didn't see a spectroscopy paper. Is that because it's not so useful in dementia, or its uses are unknown as of yet? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I think there was one or two papers that included some spectroscopy in them. But,
Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, I think there's still more work to be done on spectroscopy. The thing is, some of the other imaging methods have caught up and are maybe a little more specific, but there's some new things occurring with spectroscopy that may eventually become very important.
Sure, as a sort of very basic metabolic markers of the brain that you can sample in vivo. Of course, that's been the challenge of studying people with cognitive impairment, is that it's hard to get pathologic correlation till much later. But it seems to me that imaging is well poised to image these people in vivo. Well, we're out of time. Thank you for discussing this month's AJNR special collection on dementia. Really a comprehensive update on imaging and dementia. Dr. Lucian Levy, editor of the Special Collection, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, Yvonne, it was my pleasure.
And our listeners will no doubt want to check out this print or online version of the Special Collection available at ajnr.org. Thanks for tuning in to this special edition of AJNR Podcast. We'll see you next time.